On today's episode of HHC, Caleb sits down with Brooks West. Brooks is the owner of Franklin Bridge Golf Club in Franklin, Tennessee, just south of Nashville. What a fantastic property and such a fun course. Brooks has done a ton of work to that course, him and his staff. We're excited to share a little bit more about the details on that. But as someone who loves the game of golf, I'm sure I share the thought of, wow, how cool would it be to own a golf course? This is something that's unique about Brooks, as he also thought this and sought out a plan to do it. So we're excited to share some insight that Brooks has about that process, how it came about, and future plans for Franklin Bridge. So we hope you all enjoy Caleb's interview with Brooks West.
Hey everybody, Caleb here, and today with me I've got a special guest who also is a good friend of mine and the owner of Franklin Bridge Golf Club, Brooks West. Brooks, thanks for being with us, brother.
Caleb!
What's up, brother?
My man.
This is awesome. Thank you for, this is real, I'm looking forward to this. It's been fun to get to know you through Midtown and Cooper a little bit, and just a lot of connection points we've had. You're a golfer, and...
Golfer could be a strong statement, but I'm here, baby.
We have not played yet, which is a crime. We should definitely fix that. It's neat that you played baseball with my new superintendent, Adam. So I just feel like there's just a lot of touch points that keep popping up for us to continue to do life together, bro.
Yeah, man. Those circles seem to get smaller and smaller. But yeah, man. Love that you're here. Love getting to do this. Before we get into stuff about your golf club here, I'd love for you to just tell a little bit of information just about your background, kind of where you grew up, and a little bit of kind of your history on when golf started to become a part of your life.
Yeah, so I was born and raised in Jackson, Mississippi. I grew up in a sports family. My dad is in the Mississippi Private School Hall, Coaches Hall of Fame. Amazing basketball coach, later went on to become athletic director at Jackson Academy, which is the largest private school in Mississippi. He did that for 20 plus years. My mom was a great athlete, 4 or 5 tennis player, tennis coach at Jackson Academy, won a lot of state championships there. So I just grew up in a gym, you know, so I was a gym rat and played every sport, you know, my whole life. And then at the age of 12, my brother, who's my brother Ryan's about 7 years older than me, 6 years. And he just got into golf one summer when it was like his senior year of high school. And so he was 18, so I was 12, and I tagged along with him, and then ended up going out to LaFleur's Bluff State Park, which is a muni there in Jackson, with a good friend of mine, Paul Moak. Paul's a big-time music producer here in Nashville. He does a lot of the Kid Town music for – he played with Plum. He now produces records in the Christian world, so – he's a big deal. We played golf at LaFleur State Bluff State Park. I shot 112 on 9 holes.
Love it.
And I've never looked back. I've been hooked ever since. So by 15, I'd quit every sport for it. And, you know, as my mom would tell you, I have became obsessed, is the word that she used, which I don't appreciate that word. It has a negative connotation, but there's probably truth in it somewhere. It's probably why it hurts. But so, you know, played high school golf at Jackson Academy. I was decent. I made the state tournament, shot 77, 75, 73 in my state championship. So, you know, good, nothing great. Went on to play at Hines Community College. Sure. Played 2 years of JUCO golf there, qualified for nationals both times there. But again, nothing special. Wasn't really good enough to play Division I golf. Had some offers at D2 and D3 schools. I wanted the big school experience. I'd already done 2 years of JUCO, and so I decided to go to Mississippi State. I'd grown up a State fan my whole life. They just so happened to have the second oldest PGM program, which stands for Professional Golf Management. It's at State, it's a business marketing degree with an emphasis in golf. So it's kind of a way to stay close to the game without playing it professionally or playing D1. So did that at Mississippi State. My first internship was at Bell Mead Country Club here in Nashville. So that's when I fell in love with Nashville. It was 2001, and that was the centennial of Bell Mead, which is kind of neat. So I was there for the 100th year for that. And then The next year, went to the Country Club of Brookline. That may ring a bell for some of the golf enthusiasts. That's where they played the Ryder Cup in 1999. When Justin Leonard made that putt on the 17th green and everybody acted a fool and went on to... So there's a really cool image of Payne Stewart and David Duval up on this small balcony. And they're like spraying champagne over the crowd. And so that balcony is the third floor of the clubhouse, of the locker room clubhouse. And that was where we lived.
No kidding.
And there was the cell signal wouldn't work inside the building. So I'd have to climb out on that balcony to talk to my girlfriend or whatever. So that, you know, God rest his soul, Payne. We got a really cool movie coming out about him, which the golf world needs to, especially the believers out there. It's going to be a really, really neat story. I mean, he's an amazing man. And we're finally going to tell his story. Hopefully in a cinematic way. Justin Timberlake is one of the leads to get the role.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's kind of a neat aside that's coming in the golf world. I think it's 2023. I think, who knows with the new COVID timeline of things. So Country Club of Brookline. Then I went to Chicago, worked the U.S. Open in Olympia Fields.
Oh, man. Was that while you were done with college?
My final internship.
Okay.
That was my final internship. All Olympia Fields, Jim Furyk won. Then from there, went to Puerto Rico, worked at Dorado Beach there.
Were you still getting to play a lot during these times?
I was playing more and more. Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's really where, again, I was kind of a late bloomer.
Okay.
I was about to say,
if you hit you logged a 112 when you were 12 years old, right? And then ended up shooting low mid 70s. So you must have changed a little bit from a gym rat to a golf course rat, I guess you would say.
I mean, from the time I was 13, Caleb, until I was 27, I mean, I was 6 days a week, if not probably seven, really. I mean, I was doing something 7 days a week. I mean, it was my life. It was my, it's literally all I ever did. I mean, I would play 36 holes a day.
Was a lot of this with your brother?
No.
Okay.
No, not really.
Okay.
No, I mean, we've played some off and on, just we haven't lived in the same place really. So,
gotcha.
You know, he kind of got me into it, but
gotcha.
I wouldn't say that, I've spent a lot of time playing with him. Just,
okay.
You know, there had been, you know, seasons, or times that we've played a lot together, but overall not a lot of us played with him.
Sorry, I cut you off. No, back to Doral.
Dorado Beach.
Sorry, so Dorado
Puerto
Beach.
Puerto Rico. So like Chichi Rodriguez used to be the pro there. And so it's an amazing property, 72 holes. So that's when I started to play well.
Okay.
So I played in the Puerto Rico Open, which is a PGA Tour event now. It wasn't at the time. It was what's called the Tour de las Americas, which is now called the PGA Tour Latin America. So it's kind of a feeder to the Corn Ferry.
Yeah.
But it wasn't that at the time. It was a Tour de las Americas, which was essentially a Caribbean mini tour. So I finished 21st in that or something like that.
Yeah.
You can see the plaque. You can see the top of it over there. Shot a 68 in the third round.
That's good.
That was really sort of the jumping off point, I'd say. I started to play better and better and better. Again, didn't start really playing until I was 13 or 14.
Yeah.
And a lot of the can't miss juniors, I mean, they're playing from their five.
Of course.
They're in tournaments starting at 8 or 9.
Yeah.
So I was behind, and, you know, I didn't really come from a golf family. My dad, you know, is kind of a, you know, 15 handicap kind of guy. So, you know, I didn't really accelerate my progress, you know, that much. So that was like 20, that was 2005 or 2006.
Okay.
I was 25 at the time. So moved back to Mississippi for a sales job. And in 2007, I won the section championship.
So you're doing a sales job and you're still playing. You're still...
Right. Okay. Like I was a golf sales job.
Gotcha. All right.
So I'm going to golf courses all day, every day. So, you know, I would make my routes where I could play at the end of the day. And I'm playing every course in Mississippi, Louisiana.
Yeah.
You know, at this point, I'm a PGA professional, right? So you have the PGA Tour, which are the people you see on TV. Then you have the PGA professionals, which are the ones that work in the business of golf.
Right.
You still have to be a decent player to be a PGA professional, but you don't have to. It's not the guys you see on TV. So whenever I say PGA, people always perk up, and I'm like, no, not that PGA.
Different
PGA. We actually have to work. Those guys get to play. It's very difficult what they do. But, yeah, so, you know, my confidence grew. So, you know, at the Preserve, it was an amazing day. Shot 63, ended up winning that section championship. went on and played the Club Professional National Championship, qualified for a nationwide tour event, which is now the Corn Ferry.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the peak, you know, of my golf career. It was 2007 and 8 when I was 27 or 28. Then I went through a really bad divorce at 28 and, you know, had a combination of a really bad lesson and a really bad divorce, which are two very bad things for a golf game. So, you know, I really spent probably the next 8 years, Caleb. I mean, I wouldn't say I hated golf, but I would say that golf was a source of pain in my life.
Yeah,
it was so much a part of who I was. Like, I still would do it. People still expected me to do it. It was still a part of my social, you know, interactions with people. It's what we had in common. It's just what we did. I was still good. I just wasn't what I was, you know, what I was. It became more of a business relationship building tool than, and I haven't had any real competitive aspirations since 2007.
Did you continue to work in the golf industry through those years?
I did. I had a really neat thing happen as a result of that divorce. I stopped playing and I started caddying some. I caddied my first PGA Tour event when I was 15. Okay. So, you know, I had some really neat experience, and I've caddied in probably, I need to go count them sometime, but probably 70 PGA Tour and what, Corn Ferry Tour, professional, you know, top-notch tour events.
So wow.
I spent a ton of time caddying, and I still love the idea of caddying. I love the mental part of the game. I love the strategic part of the game. I don't really enjoy the instruction side, the technical side to me. I really just enjoy taking someone and getting them to shoot the best score they can possibly shoot.
Yeah.
And so I like playing in pro-ams or playing with my buddies and, you know, trying to be like, no, dude, don't hit the 3-wood there.
Right,
hit a 7-iron and then hit a wedge. And, it's less glorious that way, but you shoot a lot slower scores.
Makes sense. I need your help.
You could probably use my help. Like a grip and rip kind of guy. Just hate to judge a book, but
you're probably not too far off. So in kind of that the years that you were talking about, post divorce, bad lesson, did you begin to caddy kind of more or less full time?
I did for a period. So I went for a guy named Jared Turner. Went for an amazing run. You know, I'll skip some of the details for the sake of time, but just he was on the nationwide tour. I had played many tours with him. We'd become buddies, and then I was just in the right place to help him. So we finished 10th, which got him into the next event, which was a $1 million purse event, which is a big purse on that tour. So it was in Saboba Springs, California, which is right outside of Palm Springs.
Okay.
It was Ricky Fowler's pro debut. So here we are at this event, and there's like, it was, they, Puma signed him that week. They had like, you know, he was a motocross guy before he was a golfer, was a golfer. So they had like all the motorbikes out there, and like, you know, it was a big marketing splash for Ricky Fowler.
Yeah, wow.
And which made an amazing impact because we were leading the event after Friday and basically leading it after Saturday, second or whatever. But Jared never had to do an interview because all of the press was focused on the California kid, Ricky Fowler, and rightfully so.
He was
a Walker Cupper, USA, you know, can't miss prospect, super charming, still is one of my favorite golfers to this day. And we won.
No kidding.
Won the event. It was amazing experience.
Deal.
It was a huge deal, which got him his PGA Tour card. So I started the PGA Tour with him the following year. So I went to the Sony Open in Hawaii. Did the Bob Hope, which is in Palm Springs, did Torrey Pines, did Pebble, did Mayakoba in Cancun, did the Honda in West Palm, did Puerto Rico, and then he sends me a text message and fires me. Okay? So,
Jeez.
Only time I've ever been fired in my life. And so, you know, he's like, I need to go a different direction. I need a PGA Tour, a caddy with PGA Tour experience, which it was the best thing that could happen because I wasn't trying to be up caddy. You know, that wasn't what I wanted my life to look like. I didn't want to be on the road 32 weeks a year, you know, where you essentially just live your life in someone else's world. You're at the tee when they want you to be at the tee. You play when they want to play, and you just don't have any control of your time. It's an amazing profession. You know, you're inside the ropes, and it's a beautiful way to experience the highest level of golf without, but it's just a very cutthroat world. And so, you know, I'd done it, you know, it was a beautiful blessing. He and I are still great friends to this day, so there's no hard feelings. It was
great,
you know, there's a great book called Necessary Endings by Henry Cloud, Dr. Henry Cloud, I guess I should say. He wrote Outliers and What the Dog Saw and Blink and just so many, Malcolm Gladwell. So both of those authors are very similar in my mind. But that transitioned me out of caddy, and I got back into sales, and then ended up working for Yamaha Golf Cars. Okay. So spent the next 8 years going to golf courses, learning about, golf course operations. I was meeting with general managers and owners because a golf car fleet's a big decision. Worked my way up into corporate, just got far from people, got out of relationship, got out of community, was in an office environment. It was a stress for Ashley and I in our marriage. We were going through infertility. This was when we first joined Midtown, and it was difficult to get to know people like you because we were gone a lot, commuting back and forth to Atlanta. We had our house in East Nashville, so it was just it's just not where God had me. But I was like, I was in line to be one of the, top two candidates to become president of the company, wow, the golf car division at Yamaha. I mean, this is a big deal. Yeah. And I just I had no peace about it. I didn't want it. I had gotten to know a lot of people that were in small business. My brother's in small business. A lot of my best friends, Jeremy Kelton, who, mm-hmm. So I just sort of it just became apparent to me that, I just felt like the next step for me was to do something small, to get out of something big and do something small and be more in touch with people and around the game that was just woven into the fabric of who I was. So that kind of leads to the Franklin Bridge story.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. That kind of leads us right into that. Mm. So you're kind of in this place in the big dog corporate world about to potentially take on a big job, but you're kind of feeling like the suit doesn't fit, more or less. Perfect. And so tell us about, how Franklin Bridge, how did this opportunity even come about? Obviously, formerly not known as Franklin Bridge, but Forest Crossing, I believe.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So tell us about how this even became an option.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a God thing, Caleb. So the goal, I'm a backwards goal setter. I believe in looking 5 years down the line and saying, what do I want my life to look like in 5 years? And then every decision you make before that would lead you to that 5 year goal.
That's great, yeah.
Beyond five, there's so many things out of your control. It's nice to plan beyond that, but I find it to be futile, just because there's so many things that you can't predict and can't control. So, my wife, Ashley and I said, we want to raise our family in Williamson County. We want to have, our family motto is stability with flexibility. Mm. So we wanted something that would provide, a comfortable living where our needs would be met, but have the flexibility to, this morning you saw us out with Ashley and Holden and Bennett on the golf course.
Love that. Yeah, it's awesome.
Bundled up in the 34 degree, cool but sunny, and just out there with my son hitting chip shots and putting and laughing. And, so just having the flexibility to do that, in the only two ways that I found you could do that is independent sales, mm-hmm. like what you do, real estate, mm-hmm. outside sales, or small business. Those are the two ways that I've seen to achieve stability with flexibility by my definition.
That's
so, that was something called self-authoring that Jordan Peterson talks about. So these are all kind of the same concept of what do you want your life to look like? Live your life on purpose. Don't be a victim of your circumstances, a great book, 48 Days to the Work You Love. It talks about transferable skills, taking what you're good at and then mixing that with what you want your life to look like, because we don't necessarily have to be doing what it is that you're doing. There's so many things that cross over, and there's so much opportunity in this country. If you're just willing to work hard and you're passionate about something. And so that's really how this came about. And I was like, I want to be in small business. I want to be close to people, and I want to, I'd like to do something around golf. I was at a trade show in February of 2018. By that point, I'd worked my way up in Yamaha. I had contacts all across the country with big management companies. So I'm just in the know. You're in the business for 20 years. You just know people. That's just the way it is. And so people, Nashville's a hot market, so everybody's looking at it. It's actually a fairly bad golf market when you look at the number of people, GDP, the number of private golf courses, the number of public golf courses. It's actually not well balanced. There's not near enough golf courses relative to the number of people, particularly on the south side of town. That's less true north. There's more competition and saturation north in the Hendersonville, Gallatin area. There's more stuff up there. But so really just south of town, I was given this passionate speech about how there was no, Old Hickory was for sale.
Yeah.
And so I was kind of looking at that, but I didn't really like, you know, didn't want to live on that side of town. I didn't really want to be in a mid-sized private club. Those have been the ones that have been hurt the most. Anyway, I was just saying, like, there's no public golf south of Nashville. And he's like, and he kind of looks at me, and I'm like, it's kind of that look, like you got something in your teeth or your fly's undone or something like that. And I'm like, Rick, why are you looking at me like that? He goes, well, there's one. And I'm like, okay, there's one. There's Forest Crossing.
So it was actually for sale.
Well, so hang on 2 seconds. Okay, I'm almost there. So he was like, there's one. I'm like, well, yeah, there's Forest Crossing. It's owned by American Golf out of California. They ain't selling that place. Like, they're doing a ton of rounds. You know, like, they've got the market corner. There's no way they're selling it. And he's like looking at me, and I'm like, he goes, yeah, they are. And I'm like, what? So turns out, they were wanting to sell all their own golf courses to recapitalize for something called Drive Shack to compete with Topgolf. So there's now like four of these entertainment centers. Topgolf has 70, so they're you know, just trying to tap in and get a piece of that market.
Right.
So, you know, at the precise time that I'm looking to get out of, you know, upper management, golf sales, you know, corporate suit doesn't fit, as you put it.
Yeah, yeah.
And wanting to get into small business, want to raise my family in Williamson County, wanting stability and flexibility. All I've ever done is golf. All the people I know own golf courses. Like, that Forest Crossing comes up for sale.
Yeah.
So that's not Brooks West. That's not, that's just God. Like, that's all there is to that. There's no way I could create an opportunity like that. Seventh most affluent county in the country has one public golf course.
Crazy.
And I was just in the right place at the right time. So I did an SBA loan, which I'm, you know, huge, you know, proponent of.
Absolutely.
20% down. If you have industry experience and 20% down and a net worth of under $1 million, like, that's what it's there for.
Yep.
And it was, you know, 41 banks turned me down. That's a whole nother podcast that we could talk about.
Absolutely.
But, it's just, I just feel like everything I've ever done prepared me for this.
Man.
But every day I'm like lost. Like, I don't, okay, I think this is right, you know, because every day is like this new foray into like this thing I've never done before, but like I've watched it a lot, so yeah, that's just kind of like how I got here.
Well, you seem like you're holding your own. When, from the process of you having that conversation at the trade show with Rick to you actually acquiring the golf course, was that
10 months?
10 months, okay. Yeah. And for those that don't know, this is an absolute different golf course than it was. Did you kind of have, all right, here's plan, here's what we're going with. Right when we get this thing under my ownership, these are immediate first steps?
Yeah, so I think it's twofold. And this is a difficult question because I want to be respectful of the people that came before me. And like it's, The management that was here was under a lot of restriction from the management company. They didn't have support financially. You know, this place was performing, so there wasn't a lot of regional manager. It wasn't, you know, so it's a difficult question to answer, you know, because I want to be above reproach and classy and respectful. It's just my life experience, and this is not specific to Forest Crossing before I got here, is that golf is a and I think this will really resonate with your audience, Caleb, is my experience as an insider. I mean, I am a golf snob. I mean, look at what I'm wearing. I mean, I am golf I am golf nerd to the max, like 100%. I've played Cypress Point. I've played Pine Valley. Like, I've just done it, you know? And so, like, I am the poster child for golf snobs R Us. And so, like, what we, meaning me and my compadres, have created this closed-off, exclusionary, like, top-buttoned, like, thing that's, like, not fun, not approachable, like, too serious. The rules are too damn hard to understand.
Yeah.
This is speaking over, like, my life experience of 25 years in the business. And, like, what's been so exciting about Ricky Fowler and, you know, Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas and these younger generations, you're seeing the shirt tails untucked, you're seeing the t-shirts, and, you know, so hopefully the first goal was to create a a relaxed, fun golf experience. Like, not take ourselves too seriously. There's still a place for that. There are plenty of really nice private clubs in this town that if you can afford it, you can go there and you can see your college shirt and you can tuck your, be told to tuck your shirt in when you walk in the pro shop, but not here.
Yeah.
So that'd be the first thing, is I wanted to create a place that didn't take itself too seriously.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the best way to explain it. Like, golf just takes itself too seriously.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a game.
Yeah.
Like, who cares? Like, just have fun.
Oh, you know, it's so good. Very true, man.
So the second part was to, like, they had not put any money into the place. It had become overgrown. Again, not local management's fault, and it was a business strategy. They were just going to, it was doing a lot of rounds, so why put money into it? So, you know, I've played at the best places, so, like, I know, like, what it can be. So, clearing the overgrowth, raising the maintenance budget, you know, attention to detail, picking up trash, you know, and improving the pace of play. Those are really, like, the three things that we took. That tee time splits from 8 minutes to 10 minutes. You know, we added marshals that we pay. We have GPS on the cart. So just everything that makes a golf experience fun, which are great greens, good pace of play, and beautiful aesthetics with a friendly, you know, welcome to Moe's type of attitude in the pro shop.
Yeah.
That's what we try to do.
Man, I love it. And you're very much doing that. Is there any big projects coming up? Anything else that you got up your sleeve out here that you can give me a hint at in the
show notes that we were in your green room in your posh studio that we're sitting in?
That's it.
I was like, how am I going to answer this question? Because we have huge plans.
Yeah.
I
figured that might be the case.
But I haven't told my membership yet, so I can't give you, you know, I can't tell you anything that I haven't already told them. But the first priority is to fix the ninth hole. So it's the old 18th. It's a double dog leg with out of bounds left, water right, force carry on both the first and second shot. It is just a beast.
Mm-hmm.
But not in a good way. I mean, it's landlocked. It's just not a good hole. It's got a power line running through the middle of it. It's just the worst hole out here. Let's just call a spade a spade. So we will be fixing that hole this year.
Okay.
All right. So that's number one.
All right.
The second thing is that we have no putting green. You have a putting green. I see you look out there, but there's no holes in it. We just use spikes because it's too small. And with the traffic we get, the hole cups get worn out. It's not big enough to rotate, so we can't put real holes in it. We don't really have a proper chipping green. It's not safe. So we're going to completely redesign, expand, put a small net that protects the chipping and putting green from the range so that people can safely practice and expand. So those are the two biggest things that we're going to do this year. We have plans for where the current ninth green is. All that area will be freed up with the way that we're going to change the hole. I'm going to leave it at that.
All right.
So there's some ideas for some future stuff. A different golf experience. A golf experience that's more laid back. You can take a wedge, a putter, and a beer, and some music, and walk, you know, a little four-hole loop. Hit some wedge shots. Laugh with your buddies. It doesn't take 4.5 hours.
Yeah.
Bring your son out here, you know, and just experience golf in a different way than the traditional 4.5 hours of getting your teeth kicked in, and, you know, hitting it in the water and those things that all of us.
Well, that sounds exciting, man. Yeah. I appreciate you giving us just enough info there, but leaving us wanting more, right?
Yeah.
Well, man, this has been awesome. Yeah. I love hearing about your background. I love hearing about the golf course. Last question, kind of off the cuff here. Can you share with us one of kind of your best or most favorite memories on a golf course?
That's pretty easy. So Brian Jorgensen is...
you were going to say this. I was hoping so.
Brian Jorgensen's, you know, one of my best friends. He's the longtime golf professional at Nashville Golf and Athletic. We were just soul brothers from the minute I walked in his golf shop to try to sell him hats in 2010. And just became great friends with him. Got to know his family. His late wife, Patricia, walked with him through, you know, the tragedy of her passing. And he had been going to Pebble Beach for 17 years with a great man named Dick Ferrison doing a pro-am. And that gentleman was in his 70s and was looking to pass the event on Brian stepped in and purchased the event, but purchased it with a purpose. Mm-hmm. He's a big part. He's on the board of the In His Grip Golf Ministry. It's a men's ministry that's run and led by Scott Lehman. Scott Lehman. So he titled it the In His Grip World Pro-Am at Pebble Beach. So I had gone with him the year before it became that, and then went with him the next year, went again this year. And so we play Pebble, obviously, is one of the days. So Zach Radford was there to document the event. So Z-Rad Golf, he's the stinger guy that you mm-hmm. see on YouTube and Instagram. He's a wonderful guy, a buddy of mine. So he's there to kind of capture the event, to promote it on social, to get things going. So the seventh hole at Pebble Beach is the downhill postage stamp, about 100 yards on the cliffs, you know, Stillwater Cove, the Pacific Ocean. And I made a hole in one. So it's on Zyre Golf. You can find it there.
I think video went viral.
It did. So it's just like it brought glory to the event, promoted mm-hmm. the event, and which it has a great kingdom purpose. And it's really hard to top a hole in one at Pebble Beach in your buddy's event on film. You know, it's just that definitely is the golf highlight of my life for sure.
Love that, man. Beautiful story.
Thanks for letting me talk about that. It's fun to talk about.
Yeah. Well, man, thank you for being on the pod. And I'm sure this is not the last time we'll get to hear from you, brother. So I appreciate it big time.
Well, I love what you guys are doing, promoting golf to that non-elite group. The group, the guys that listen to this, and ladies, y'all are the future of this game. And just remember, it's a game for fun. It's a game of community. And it's a game of a lifetime. And just don't take ourselves too seriously. We'll be right back.